What's up, everybody, and welcome back to episode 145 of the Designated Players Podcast. In this episode, we're highlighting MLS's version of the Curse of the Bambino, a curse known all too well by the New York New Jersey MetroStars slash New York Red Bulls, which has caused them to miss out on the elusive MLS Cup every year of their existence. Following that, we have the story of the first ever pitch invasions in league history after Brian McBride scored the last-minute winner for Columbus versus New England in 1996, a moment that created lifelong Crew fans and the passion that one could probably argue eventually kept them in Columbus over 20 years later. My name's Andrew. I'm joined by my good buddy Connor, and this is MLS History Retold. Connor, how you doing, buddy?
I'm happy you referred to me as your good buddy. So I feel like that's not a common occurrence.
No. Like I said, we're feeling good today. We're feeling happy.
Yeah, is that because we have nothing to fight about?
Not yet. We'll get there, I'm sure. But how did you get on doing research for this? Did you enjoy it?
I did. Yeah, I thought that this story on the Crew here is it was a really interesting one. A lot of player takes, got a lot of player quotes. I thought that was really interesting to kind of get their perspective. So it's definitely worth listening to. So stay tuned, even though it's the second story of the episode.
I love it. Have you heard of the Curse of Carricola?
I haven't. So this is new for me too.
You'll enjoy that. Well, before we do that, let's dive into Scarf of the Week. What are you rocking?
Well, I had to go on theme for this one, considering I am talking the Columbus Crew. I have brought out my terribly ugly Crew scarf, and I do not blame the Crew for this one being ugly. It's not really like a Crew scarf, it's more of like an MLS Cup scarf, but
gotcha.
It was cheap, so I got it.
I am rocking, of course, we are talking about Metro, so I've got this Red Bull scarf. It is a scarf that I wore yesterday, I should say, to the Red Bulls' first win of the season. So we enjoy it. We love it. We continue to rep. But if that's all we got, why don't we just jump right in? All right, we're going to start with what is passionately known as the Curse of Carricola. You bring this name up to any RBNY fan today, you get a giggle, you get a smile, and they know exactly what you're talking about. Some may even feel a little hurt, but that's okay too. We're going to flash back to April 19th, 1996. The New York, New Jersey MetroStars are playing host to the New England Revolution, the first home game in the history of the MetroStars, playing in Giant Stadium in front of a sold-out crowd of 46,826. New England, according to Transfer Market, came out in a 4-2-4. Names like Adrian Heaney, Welton, and our favorite talking head, Alexi Lalas, playing in that team. The Metro came out in, again, according to Transfer Market, a 6-3-1 shape. Six defenders were on this list. Some notable names, including a ponytailed Tony Miola in goal, current Portland Timbers head coach Gio Savarese up top, Peter Vermees, current SKC coach, and one Nicola Carricola in the back line. A bit about him. He joined MLS just for 1 year after a very, very strong career in the Serie A with the likes of Juve, Genoa, and Torino. He came over just for that year, but it was just enough time to curse the Metro for all eternity. The game between the two teams was exactly what you would expect in 1996 MLS. It was boring. It was bad. It lacked flair. It lacked talent. But most of all, it lacked goals. For 86 minutes, all 46,000 fans watched a scoreless match between these two teams begging for a winner, and they got it. Just not quite how you would expect it. It's the 87th minute. There's a big switch of play for the New England Revolution, and the Metro are found defending the left-hand side of the pitch. Darren Swatsky, Darren Swatowski is played into the box looking to put one on goal. All four Metro defenders running back facing their own goal, which is never a good sign. He hits one low to the right, and Miola does really well to make the first save. The ball falls to the foot of Carricola on the edge of the six-yard box, and then it happens. Whatever mystical force was in the air that night made the ball bounce just a little bit funnier than usual off the giant stadium turf. Caricola went to clear the ball over the end line to give away a corner. And instead, it took that funny bounce. It went the complete opposite direction of where his foot was going, and it flew into the top corner of the net. 3 minutes and some stoppage time later, the full-time whistle blows, and Metro lose the game. Now, every fan who knows of this curse believes that this single moment has ruined us for the entirety of our existence. The curse is still yet to be broken, neither by Metro nor Red Bull. Every That's So Metro moment, every agonizing heartbreak, year after year after year, it is all attributed to this one goal, the curse of Caricola. Are we really cursed? Are we using it just as a scapegoat to cover up our inability to be good in clutch moments? No, we're definitely cursed. Like, that's the only actual answer. Metro fans are still waiting for the day that the curse can be put to bed. This is MLS version of the curse of Bambino, and it lives on to this very day. What I will say is it was pretty cool that they interviewed him. MLS Soccer interviewed him, and he was pretty good about it. You know, he laughed about it. He talked about it being, you know, he felt bad that it went in and he caused it all. They interviewed Mike Pecky. They interviewed a whole bunch of fans. Very cool that he sat down and laughed about it. But this is something that to this day, Red Bull fans still hold close to our heart, saying, we're just a little bit unlucky, I think.
Am I allowed to talk now?
Yes, you can talk.
So this is the curse, because this is the first That's So Metro moment. Is that how it works?
Well, it's the second That's So Metro moment, but it was the first time
outside of the draft.
Right, outside of the draft. But it's the first one that happened in our first home game, right at the very end of the game. And it started this chain of events that we could not recover from. So yeah, you could say it was the first of very many that just kept this cursed.
Look, I'm not a Red Bull fan, and I'm sure that the statement is going to make that evident, but it feels like there's a lot of unjust blame going to Caricola for a lot of things that are completely out of his control and are not even in the same realm as what he did on the field. So it feels a little unjust to name a curse after him.
So what it sounds like is you don't believe in the power of superstition, and you clearly have never been on the wrong side of things like that. So your opinion is invalid.
I'm a Mets fan. If there is anything more cursed than being a Mets fan, I don't know what is.
Yeah, that's when they interviewed Mike Pecky in this interview on MLS Soccer. It was he said the same thing. He goes, you know, they labeled it the curse of Caricola. I don't really buy into that. I think it's just more of a, you know, thing. But here's the thing. We had to get this in quickly because it's going to be irrelevant by the end of this year. We're going to win the cup.
Not the way you've started this season. I don't know about that one.
So, yep. It
you actually
was,
have to score goals to win cups.
We scored two of them. Yeah, it was the first in-game That's So Metro moment that we still have yet to shake off. It was the most anticlimactic ending to the first ever home game possible, and to this day we are still recovering from said.
You know, I love me a good That's So Metro moment, but you know what I love more than that? Pitch invasions. Yes, absolutely. And I'm going to tell you about one that happened in 1996 with the Columbus Crew. I do want to cite my sources here. I used an article by Steve Cirque, who made a really great article, a lot of player quotes in there as well, talking about the event. Also took a little bit from a YouTube video from the Columbus Crew nerd. So definitely a credit to them for getting a lot of this information for me. So the day is May 11th, 1996. The Columbus Crew are facing off against the New England Revolution, the first of many head-to-head matchups between these two teams. 24,750 people piled into Ohio Stadium, home of the Ohio State Buckeyes. The starting lineups for this day. I'm going to go through the whole thing in case anybody wants to hit some nostalgia on players that they actually remember. I'll ask you afterwards if you know any of these names. I'm sure you know some of them. For the Columbus Crew, in goal, was Bo Oshinigi, defender. Ooh, something happened here. The name got a little messed up. I will come back on the full name, but I believe it was Shane. Actually, I have it up. Give me 1 second. Shane Battelli, defender Mike Clark, defender Janusz Michalik, defender Mark Watson, midfielder Adrian Paz, midfielder Bill Thompson, midfielder Todd Yeagley, midfielder Brian Bliss, midfielder Dr. Kumalo. What a name, I have to say. And forward, Brian McBride. For New England, in goal, it was Adrian Heaney, Mike Burns, Richard Wiseman, everyone's favorite Alexi Lalas, Jeff Onger, or Onger, Paul Keegan, Ted Chronopoulos, Beto Naveda, Robert Ukrop, and Welton. Oh, sorry, and Peter Woodring. Almost missed one there. So those were the starting lineups for this game between the Brew and the Revs. So let's get into how the game played out. So game kicks off in 34 minutes. The Crew fans find themselves in familiar territory, down 2-0 at home. And it's familiar territory because in their last home game against the Tampa Bay Mutiny, they also found themselves 2-0 down and ended up losing that game 2-1. So probably a lot of familiar frustration from Columbus fans at this point. It got to this point because in the 18th minute, Welton made it 1-0 for New England. And in the 34th, Beto Naveda doubled the lead to make it 2-0. Both of those goals assisted by Paul Keegan. After Columbus demolished DC United in their home opener 4-0, Columbus fans must be thinking that that result starts to feel like a fluke at this point. Considering back-to-back home games following that, they've gone 2-0 down. Halftime comes around, score still the same. It's 2-0 to New England. Timo Lukowski, the Columbus manager at the time, must have given them one hell of a team talk, because things would not stay the same in the second half. Straight out the gates, 3 minutes into the second half, Brian McBride, one of the best goal scorers in MLS and USMNT history, pops up to pull one back for Columbus. So now it's 2-1 in favor of New England. Now, I can't say I was at the game considering I wasn't even born yet, but I would imagine after that goal went in, there was a certain scent in the air. The fans might have smelled the comeback, but the Crew, they must have smelt blood in the water. Because sure enough, in the 87th minute, sneaky Pete Marino slides in on a loose ball to tie the game for the Crew. Now, I want to, before I go into how the rest of the game played out, I do want to give a little context to how timing worked in 1996 MLS. So when it comes to, as I mentioned in our previous episode on MLS History Retold, the way MLS did clock management was if there was an injury or something that would require extra time as we know it now, MLS would just stop the clock instead. So once the clock hits 90 minutes, that's it. The game was over. So in this case, with Pete Marino scoring in the 87th minute, there's only 3 minutes left in this game, and that's it. No injury time, nothing else. 3 minutes left. Game is tied. If you have some context as to how this would feel in terms of like a real, like nowadays injury time type of goal, this would be equivalent to a 92nd minute goal, 5 minutes of stoppage time. At this point, you got to be thinking, there's no way we're getting anything else out of this. 2-2 is great. We'll take this to penalties. We'll see what happens from there. 3 minutes left in the game, we're not getting anything else. Wrong. Brian McBride, the same Brian McBride that started the comeback for Columbus in the 48th minute, chests down a pass from Clark on the left side of the box and rolls it past the keeper to win the game for Columbus in the 89th minute. If you want to put that into U.S. sports terms, that is a true buzzer beater for the Columbus Crew to win the game. And the fans went wild. Now, let's get into the pitch invasion. This is what we all come here for. It's the title of this episode, the title of this story. Following the whistle, fans in the hundreds began to charge onto the field to celebrate with players after this historic comeback. Mike Clark recalls seeing the worry on the faces of security guards as they were not prepared at all to stop the wave of Crew fans rushing onto the field. Brian McBride, the hero of the night, was the main objective for the Crew fans running onto the field. Everybody wanted to come celebrate with the guy that scored two goals in the game winner in the 80th minute. McBride recalls many fans coming up to him to hug him and even kiss him on the face. In that moment, there was nothing he could do. He just had to accept his fate and hope that all the Crew fans rushing onto the field were good-natured. Many of the players recall having a sense of panic right at the start of the invasion. And rightfully so, if you look at the history of pitch invasions in soccer around the world. But once they realized that the pitch invaders had no ill intent and just wanted to come on the field to celebrate together with the players, they began to feel a lot more at ease and celebrate with them. A few players, funny enough, were able to escape to the tunnel with no issues, since people at the time had no idea who they were. They were not a big name. They weren't the one scoring the big goal game. So they were able to escape away with no real issues. It was mainly Brian McBride that everybody wanted to celebrate with. So Cirque retells the story specifically on one player, Dr. Kumalu, the guy with the amazing name. So he retells the story of seeing Kumalu, seeing the pitch invasion, and once he saw the fans rushing onto the field, he made a mad dash for the tunnel. And trailing in hot pursuit was a fan who wanted to come celebrate with him, presumably. But I'm not sure that's what was going through Kumalu's mind. As soon as he saw the players rushing on the field, his thought was, I'm getting the heck out of here. And he bolted for the tunnel. Kumalu was able to escape to the tunnel with no issues after the fan tried to leap over the signboards, but was unsuccessful and fell flat on his face. Kumalu was getting some of this attention because he, at the start of the season, he was marketed as one of the star players of the team. So it's not to some surprise that he would be the center of the attention for this pitch invasion. Brian Bliss stated that he thought that some of the players on the team, including Kumalu, likely thought that the pitch invasion was out of anger for a referee's decision or out of anger towards an opponent. But Bliss stated that it's the Midwest. All they want to do is just give you a hug. So after researching into this story, I can definitely say with a full certainty that I can see how this event certainly created many Columbus fans for life. And like you said, probably ultimately helped win over the Columbus faithful that kept the Crew in Columbus. So I think this was honestly, it was a great story to look into.
I love everything about that. That entire, like, start to finish, the player interviews. I had read that article as well when this first was brought up, and absolutely lovely. I guess one question, I guess, before we wrap this up, how much of an impact do we think that had? You know, you talk about impact 20-something years later, right? That's probably 25 years later, that these fans that were allowed to storm the pitch and get that connection now are 25 years later, we're in a fight to keep their club where it was. You know, how much of an impact do you think, after doing that research, do you think that this had? If you could quantify it.
Oh, it was massive. I mean, even the video made by the Columbus Crew Nerd, I mean, even he said this was the night where he became a Columbian for life. So I would imagine almost every single person in that stadium that was there to watch the Columbus Crew became a Columbus fan for life. And when you become a Columbus fan for life, I'm sure that passes down to your kids, your grandkids. Like, you've made Columbus fans out of an entire family, out of an entire generation of people that were at that game. So I think it's massive. And you have to remember the fact that this is just like a random home game in the middle of the season. This isn't the first home game for them. This isn't the first game of the season. This isn't the MLS Cup final. This is just a random home game where they had an amazing comeback and won the game. And the fans were so excited and into it that they stormed the field afterwards. So, yeah, I mean, I think that just showed how passionate the fans were for this team and how into the sport people were in this country. I feel like it was laying the groundwork for many of the fans that they even still have now.
Yeah, I was trying to take a look and see, but yeah, the invasion was mentioned as one of the biggest moments for a lot of these fans here. And I think that's a reason why we need to tell these stories, is because nobody will understand. You know, everybody will know the MLS Cup 2022, you know, goalkeeper breaks leg, backup from USL saves penalties, Gareth Bale scores winners. Nobody knows about a pitch invasion from 96 that snowballed into fan support and fan support and fan support to the point where they fought to keep a club where it was. Nobody knows these stories, and that's why I love doing this research, and I can't thank everybody enough who threw these ideas out for us to dive into. So thank you so much, everybody, for listening and for jumping in and having a listen to our 145th episode. If you did, please leave a like, subscribe, and comment and share it and all that good stuff. Make sure you're following us wherever you get your podcasts so you know when the next episode goes live, which will be about Andrew Shue. Those of you who know already know. And Eddie Pope's game-winning goal in the first ever MLS Cup. Make sure you're following us on all forms of social media so you can see our clips, our TikToks, all these things. So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. Make sure you're following us there so you can see all the clips. If you can't catch the entire 25-minute episode, that's cool too. Connor, you got anything else you want to add?
Nope.
Nope. All right. Well, thanks everybody for watching, listening, or just overall just being you. And we will see you next time on the next episode of the Designated Players Podcast. See ya.